Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Germany has spent decades reckoning with its Nazi history and the Holocaust, but in recent years, far-right extremism, violent plots, especially against Jews, Muslims, and immigrants, have been on the rise. At the same time, the AfD, Alternative for Germany Party, has been gaining grounds and has been accused of provoking violence, which it denies. In a new Frontline documentary, Germany's Enemy Within, filmmaker Evan Williams investigates the rise of the AfD and far-right extremism in Germany. And we're joined now by Evan Williams, and welcome to The Source.
Hello, David. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Your documentary, which aired last night on PBS, but it's now available to view on YouTube and on the Frontline website, but your documentary is bone-chilling scary. I hadn't really been paying attention to politics in Germany. I've been looking more at other countries. I kind of thought, you know, they had their act together. But now I'm going to have to add it to my list of things to keep reading about. I want to start off by playing a clip. This is from CNN International when they covered the plot to raid, to storm the parliament. Let's give a listen.
We begin in Germany, and major arrests in an alleged plot to overthrow the government. Police staged early morning raids across the country, detaining more than two dozen people suspected of conspiring to attack the parliament. Another two dozen people are being investigated. Prosecutors say members of the far-right group called Reich Citizens Movement followed conspiracy myths and QAnon ideology. Germany has been struggling to get a grip on far-right extremism in recent years.
Evan Williams, how serious was this attempt to storm the parliament in Germany? And it seems there's a lot in the documentary that echoes things that are happening in the United States, and if it was inspired by our January 6th event.
Yeah, great question, David. And you're right. I mean, I think there's so much going on in the world that it's not your fault for not having focused on German politics. It's been one of those sleepers that we've kept an eye on since 2021. And gradually, the threat has increased. I think the organization has increased, and because the far right is also now getting more and more into political the political sphere and potentially into political control, that's why we decided to focus on this. To answer your question on the Reichsbürger plot, it's characterized, it's a very interesting and quite unusual situation. I mean, these were... It was led, allegedly, one of the co-leaders was a German aristocrat called Henry Prince Royce, whose lands were basically, whose family's family lands were lost around the turn of the century, last century. And he's always been trying to get them back. He got involved with a group, potentially led them, according to investigators, to try and storm the federal parliament in Berlin and install a new government with him at the head. These people, according to investigators, included former soldiers, former special forces soldiers, former police officers, some lawyers, and a former judge. We'll get onto that shortly because it ties into the politics. And they planned to, according to investigators again, they planned to violently storm the federal parliament to arrest certain members of parliament, and again, as we're told in our film, to potentially assassinate some of them and install themselves as a new government. I think they were a small, relatively small group, some 25 to potentially 50 people, but the head of domestic intelligence tells us there was a wider network that is still under investigation, so there may be many more arrests to come in the next couple of years. But I think from the investigation that we saw, they believed that certain elements of the army and police force would get behind them and support this coup effectively. Now, I must say that I was in one of the first court appearances. All the defendants plead not guilty. They say that, yes, they met. They discussed certain things. They discussed how Germany should be ruled by a new regime. But there was never a plan to violently overthrow the government. and we're all innocent of the terror charges they are now on. So it was serious. I mean, let's look at the police operation. It was 3,000 police officers over 11 states in Germany, one of the biggest anti-terror operations in German modern history. And yet you look at the other side of this and they say, well, come on, these are just pensioners, they're older people, they're retirees. They could never have done anything serious. But I guess it comes down to one comment from one of the domestic intelligence chiefs we interviewed, who says, look, they would never have overthrown Germany, but it would have been potentially a very bloody attack on the governmental institutions. And so I hope that gives you a good reading on the nature of this. And to answer your second question, it's very interesting. When I was filming this story, I kept thinking about the resonances between the United States and Germany. And there's a lot more echo going on than I think we realize. The German far-right movement, including those involved in violent plans, watch very closely what's going on in the United States. I couldn't say for sure. I've got no evidence that they were directly inspired by what happened on January 6th, but we know that they are watching very closely, and we know that this concept of a sort of end of democracy idea is very active within the far-right scene in Germany. So it's being watched very closely. And in fact, President Trump himself was quoted back to me by one of the far-right politicians in one of our interviews. So there's a resonance for sure.
Well, Steve Bannon, who has been orchestrating far-right activities in the United States, has an international arm. He has, he works with people internationally. So I'm wondering if there's activity there. But, after the attempted coup, if you want to call it that, the raid that was stopped before it was able to get off the ground, there was that attempt to normalize, as you talk about. They're saying, oh, they're just a bunch of old guys, with their fantasies, and they didn't really do anything. Just leave them alone. That attempt to normalize, was it normalized? Were they successful? Like we saw here in January 6th in the United States, it was just a bunch of tourists, not really trying to do anything bad. They just walked in the door type stuff.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, David. There was an attempt, particularly by the far right political party, the Alternative for Deutschland, for Germany, as you mentioned. Their co-leaders went in front of the TV cameras and basically said, of course, that one of their politicians, former MPs, was accused of being at the center of this plot. She's a judge, a district judge in Berlin, or was. And was going to be, according to investigators, the justice minister in this new regime. And she had also walked several members of the plot through the parliament and basically showed them around on more than one occasion where they took videos and they worked out what were the right corridors and where they could go and what was the entry points and the exit points. She, of course, in her defense, says, well, look, yes, I met these guys. We talked. I showed them around. But I was never going to be involved in a domestic terror plot. That wasn't the plan. So her party leaders then went into press conferences and said, okay, if she's found guilty, we'll dismiss her from the party. But they also then attacked the security services for what they called was an overreaction. They said these were just pensioners, as you've said. They were never going to be a threat. This is completely over the top. 3,000 officers. What are we thinking? Well, domestic intelligence chiefs think otherwise. And the charges, treason charges, are very, very serious. And the domestic intelligence chiefs we interview say they needed to, obviously, as we know, wait until there was enough evidence of them actually about to do something for that for those arrests and those charges to stand up in court. And for that to happen, in my mind, means they were very close, if not in the process of actually enacting this attempted violent act. So I think it's much more serious than the AFD were trying to portray.
Well, they can dismiss this as something as a nothing burger, as we say. But the attack on the synagogue, which was deadly, That is something that is, I don't see how that can be so easily dismissed. And as you report in your Frontline documentary, that you say this is just tip of the iceberg.
That's right. The synagogue attack was a really fascinating case. This was back in 2020-2021 when a lone gunman tried to shoot his way into a synagogue in the city of Halle. It was on Yom Kippur, the religious holiday, so the synagogue was full. There were more than 50 people inside. There was only one thick wooden door between the street and the actual synagogue itself. And the head of the community who we interviewed told us that he only put that in because he was less than satisfied, let's say, at that point with the degree of security with which the police were providing the Jewish community in that city. And so they got the money together and they put in this very solid oak door. Now, had that not been there, it would have been potentially a massacre of more than 50 Jewish people in a synagogue. And if we just think about that for a moment, the act itself was described by prosecutors as the most one of the most heinous anti-Semitic acts in Germany since World War II. And what's interesting is, what's this guy's motivation? Where does he get the inspiration? He was largely a loner. He was largely radicalized by online communities. And what's really interesting is that these communities are not, they are transnational. They involve Germans, Americans, Australians, French. You know, there is a community of far-right people in this online community which are encouraging each other to go out there and do violent acts. And if you put that together with the anti-immigrant, anti-minority rhetoric that you hear from far-right politicians in places like Germany, that tend to then, we can't say necessarily directly inspire these guys, but certainly inform and encourage their actions and belief, then that's where you start to get the picture. And that's very much what the synagogue attacker was involved in.
I think you reported that he was 26 years old, so young enough so that World War II and the Holocaust would seem like ancient history to him. And so he wouldn't be like informed about trying to still deal with trying to right the wrongs of World War II, but still kind of radicalized by some people, by the imagery and the rhetoric of that.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, it's fascinating that this new generation of potential far-right extremist, largely deranged people, have no connection to that. And Germany, it's fascinating. I mean, Germany obviously takes great pains, as you said in your introduction, to try and they have laws in place where certain Nazi slogans and imagery and sayings are illegal. You know, you can be up on criminal charges for saying or sharing some of this material, precisely because Germany has gone through the extreme outcome of a far-right regime. And no other country has the laws in place that Germany has in terms of some of this material. And it is anti-Semitic, anti-Muslim, anti-minority, anti-LGBTQ. I mean, everything that is not sort of the mainstream idea of sort of, in this case, you know, the white German who's been around for hundreds of years in their family history, is targeted. And when that sort of rhetoric gets shared for political reasons, that is what seems to get picked up by these fringe elements that are then willing to take on, to pick up and pursue violent aims. And he was very much one of them.
Our phone lines are open. We do want to hear from our listeners. Have you been following these events in Germany? Are you concerned about these developments? Did you watch last night's Frontline documentary? What's your reaction? If you didn't watch it last night on TV, you can still watch it on YouTube. The whole thing's right there. Also, you can go to the Frontline website, PBS website, and see it as well. You can watch it on the PBS app. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue our discussion with Evan Williams. He is the writer and the director and the reporter, the correspondent for the Frontline documentary, Germany's Enemy Within. Very chilling stuff, very reflective of what we're seeing here in the United States. We'll be right back. The Source continues. Stay with us.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're discussing the latest Frontline documentary. It aired last night, Germany's Enemy Within. We're joined by the correspondent and director, the writer of the documentary, Evan Williams. It's chilling about the political developments in Germany and the rise of a right wing there that seems on the cusp of possibly gaining more political power. We were speaking earlier, Evan, about the slogan that was given in public by the far right wing. He's like the head or the figurehead of the group AfD, Hooker. And I'm going to play a clip of that so we can get a better idea of what we're talking about.
In 2021, Hooker gave a speech which included a slogan used by the Nazis: "Everything for Germany."
Alles für unsere Heimat, alles für Sachsen-Anhalt, alles für Deutschland.
Under German law, the phrase is illegal, and Hooker was charged with knowingly using a Nazi slogan. He later called the Nazi era horrific, but claimed he wasn't aware of the slogan's history.
Ich stehe an einigen Monaten vor der großen Strafkammer des Landes Sachsen-Anhalt, weil ich mal einen Wahlkampfabschluss.
Then he did it again.
Alles für unsere Heimat, alles für Sachsen-Anhalt, alles für.
So Evan Williams, Hook is saying that he didn't know the history of that slogan. Does that hold water?
I don't think so. I mean, Bjorn Hooker is a former history teacher. He's obsessed with history, according to people who have analyzed his work and political career. He heads the AfD in the East German state of Thuringia. He's very powerful and influential within the AfD nationally, within the party nationally. He chooses executive members. He gives the nod to EU members and candidates. He's a very powerful figure. I believe he knows exactly what he's saying and exactly what he's doing. And his critics would say that what we're seeing here is a very classic example of dog whistling, basically where he's pushing the boundaries on illegal speech. This is a phrase that I discovered in the course of making this film, Alles für Deutschland, or Everything for Germany. It sounds perfectly innocent. I mean, who wouldn't want the best for their country, right? But it was a phrase that was used by the Nazi SA, the Brown Shirts, the very early Nazi militia, as their key slogan. It was on their honor daggers, engraved in their daggers. It was on the backs of halls in the early 1930s mass Nazi rallies where Hitler turned up and started really moving things along. This is a phrase that is known, and it is banned in Germany because of its history. Now, for a history teacher to get up publicly and use that phrase is very incendiary. And you wonder then, well, what's the message? The message is, let's go back to some form of German puritanical, ethno-nationalist, white supremacist sort of idea about what Germany should be. That's what he's doing, I believe. And the fact that he did it once, he was then charged criminally for using it. And then he did it again, as we say in the film, in front of a group of people in East Germany, in the East German city of Gera, and encouraged them to repeat, to complete the sentence. Now, that is a very political act. He was eventually, we did interview Bjorn Hooker, as you saw in the piece, and I asked him directly about it. I mean, you know, the fact is he's been charged, it's a criminal offence. And he says, well, no, it's perfectly fine. It's a patriotic saying. There's nothing wrong with it. And in fact, that's when he quoted Trump back to me and said, well, Trump said America first, and this is exactly the same. Well, what's the problem? This is not a criminal offence. Anyway, about 2 weeks later, he was found guilty in a criminal court and fined about $30,000 for the offence. So this gives you an idea of the way that certain far-right political messaging is being used to, I think, appeal to white Germany, that there is a there is a framework here which suits them, which is anti-immigrant, which is purely white, which is non-Muslim. That's what I think his messaging is when he uses these sort of phrases.
Let's go to a phone line. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Did you watch the Frontline documentary last night? What are your thoughts? And have you been tracking this? What can you tell us? Let's go to Godian. Godian on the phones, and you're on the air.
Hi, this is Godian. I have a question. I was wondering whether... you know, the right-wing movement really originated in the former East Germany, because a lot of the trouble really started there, as I remember, in Sachsen and in Thuringen. And, you know, during the war, they lived under the fascist regime. Then when the communist regime was on, it was not much different, so you did not have any critical thinking or soul-searching. Mm. And now... whereas the West Germany, we had the Stolpersteine everywhere, and it was really was, you know, that never again, that was really embedded in us. So I'm really shocked that it has taken over so much.
Well, Godin, thank you so much for calling. We appreciate your input on that. And so, Evan Williams?
Yes, Godin, that's a really excellent question and a really, really important point. Part of our investigation was looking at why is the far right so strong in East Germany. And David, just to give you an idea and your listeners, the AfD, the far right party, it polls around 20-22% across the country. But in East Germany, particularly in 3 to 5 main East German states, Thuringia, Saxony, Anhalt, Saxony, and Brandenburg, they poll at the moment between 30-36% support, which means that they could win enough votes in the next state elections on September 1st to be the biggest party in those states. Now, there's a number of reasons why that may or may not translate into power, but that gives you an idea of the support they've got in the East as opposed to the rest of the country. And I asked many people about this, and Godian raises a really important point. And one person who ran an anti-fascist think tank in Berlin, who came from East Germany, explained it to me in one way, that after the Soviets basically took control of East Germany, they said to the East Germans, fascism, this is directly after World War II, fascism was a result of capitalism, we're now here, therefore fascism doesn't exist, and no action was ever taken to try and root out the Nazi networks that maintained themselves in East Germany for those many years. And I believe that what happened was, in West Germany, there was a little bit more effort, although some people say not enough, but there was an effort to try and root out the Nazi culture. And in East Germany, it basically was left alone and, in fact, became one of the only forms of organized nationalist German resistance to the Soviets. And one of the reasons why these networks are very strong in these East German towns, and this is a very rural area, small towns, very beautiful, but small, not much industry, and that they maintained, and through transgenerational transmission of these ideas, I believe, have maintained themselves. And there's one other really important point, and this was that after reunification, after the Berlin Wall came down, East Germany was promised an economic dividend. And many people in East Germany feel that never happened, that a lot of people left East Germany, the money didn't come their way, investment wasn't made, industry wasn't revitalized, and they feel like they're still being ignored and they're second-class citizens, and they've got a lot to complain about, particularly with a land war in Ukraine. This is a really important point, with uncertainty over cost of living, increased costs because of a loss of energy from the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Germany cutting itself off from the gas. All of these things meld together. And what's happening is that many people in East Germany who do not identify as far right or neo-Nazi in any way, average people, pensioners that we spoke to, say that the AfD is the only party listening to them and giving them a sensible alternative. And that's why they've managed to broaden their electoral base to the point now where they are on the brink of potentially taking power in some of those states.
So when you had your interview, and it was a rare interview, doesn't give interviews many times to foreign press, with Hooker, He said that the problem isn't right-wing extremism, but government extremism trying to destroy its opposition. He was playing the victim, saying that he should be able to say whatever he wants.
Well, exactly. And this this gets to a really key point in what's going on in Germany today. So in Germany, after World War II, they set up the domestic intelligence body, the BFV. I won't try and say that in German. I never get it right. But it's a domestic intelligence. And it was set up basically to try and monitor and prevent the return of extremism, particularly violent extremism, after the experience of the Nazis. And this organization is both federal and state. So you have a state version, a state body, a state office, and a federal body. And the BFV has declared the AfD in Thuringia and two neighboring states as being an extremist threat to democracy. That is an official designation that's gone through the courts, and the courts have determined that the BFV, the domestic intelligence, has enough information to say, yes, they are a threat to democracy because of their extremism. They are therefore under surveillance by domestic intelligence in those states. The party has also been declared a suspected extremist threat to democracy across the country, which is a slightly lower rating, but still on the radar of domestic intelligence. So when Bjorn Hooker, I said to Bjorn Hooker, well, you personally and your party here in the state of Thuringia are now under surveillance as an extremist threat to democracy. And it was in that context that he said, well, there is no far right problem in here. It is merely the government trying to curtail legitimate opposition through this organization. And if I get into power, I'm going to curtail.
Well, we'll get more into that when we come back from this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about last night's Frontline documentary. It premiered on PBS KLRN last night. It's available for free online on YouTube. It's also on the Frontline website, on the PBS website, on their app. You can view it, and I hope you do, because it's very important. It's interesting. It's bone-chilling. We're joined by Evan Williams, the director of the documentary, Germany's Enemy Within. So the first raid that we talked about earlier in the program, that wasn't just a one-off. There were other attempts for conspiracies to try to take over or redirect government policies. And so I want to talk about the Potsdam meeting at a hotel and the reporter Jan Peters with the publication Corrective and what he covered. But let's listen to this clip.
The attendees went on to discuss a plan for the mass deportation of immigrants, even those with German citizenship.
It was literally a master plan. The deportation, as I would say, they call it remigration, of millions of people, including people with a German passport.
The meeting's main speaker was Austrian far-right activist Martin Sellner.
Ab einem gewissen Punkt könnte es eine demokratische Mehrheit für eine Scharia-Leit in Europa geben.
According to Corrective, he proposed that Germany expel millions of immigrants to a so-called model city in North Africa. He called it remigration.
It's a bluntly racist idea. So there's the real Germans, those who have in their blood and in their, you know, they call it culture nowadays, and there's those who should go back to the countries where they will be happier because, you know, they're not real Germans.
So, Evan Williams, this reporting that Peters did for Corrective, was that a bombshell?
Absolutely. I mean, it's very interesting. The discussion very much centered around Martin Sellner's concept of remigration, as we say in the documentary and in their reporting, which is that, illegal immigrants, first of all, should be sent back to their countries. And then they developed this idea that migrants who somehow have not assimilated enough into German society, are not German enough, could also be then considered as people that might be encouraged to go back. And there's varying degrees of what that then means. But in our interview with Bjorn Hooker, He said exactly that. He said those who have not assimilated, those who are on welfare, those who are not, German enough, could be encouraged to leave. They insist that AfD policy is not to try and deport German citizens, but this caused a massive wave of protest against the far right and against the AfD in Germany over many, many weeks in many, many cities. And one of the reasons that we believe this happened, as explained to us by one of the political scientists we interview in the film, is that all of a sudden Germans started to realize that these guys are actually sort of in the background planning, discussing this sort of thing, not in some sort of, fairy tale way, but actually discussing how they might do it if and when they actually get into some sort of political power.
Sort of like our Project 2025 in the United States. They draw up a plan. This is what we do if we happen to get power. We don't have to wait. We can move right away, and this is how we do it.
Exactly, David. And the thing is that I asked Jean Peters there. It's fair enough for somebody to sort of say something, right? But if you're in a meeting, and there were four AfD party members in this meeting, and they might have genuinely said, "No, this is abhorrent. We can't possibly discuss this." And apparently the nature of the discussion was, how do we do this? Let's get together an influence campaign. Let's start getting some money together. Let's get things ready so that when we're in a position to actually do this, we can do this. And so you're absolutely right. These are plans being drawn up by the far right, or at least being discussed in a way in which they believe they'll have some sort of control. And Bjorn Hooker says that at the City Hall meeting we filmed him at in Thuringia, If they win state power in Thuringia, he will create the local airport. The state airport will become a deportation airport. He will start deporting illegals first of all. But where does it then go? So the resonances with what's going on in the United States with this sort of rhetoric, this sort of talk, are very real.
So how does he become? If the leader of a state, like a province, how does he have that much authority?
Well, it's a very complicated process, and it might be a long way from it. But then put it very simply, and it's quite a complex situation. If they win, say, 30-35% of the vote, that is probably going to be, at this stage on polling, the biggest block, the biggest number of votes. There'll be other parties that will win other numbers. So ostensibly, they should have the right to form government. In Europe's very complex coalition sort of government systems, what could happen is that the other parties will get together from the far left and the center, and they might get together, let's say 55% of the vote, and therefore they would then try and form government and the AfD would be excluded. However, it's not outside the realms of possibility that the AfD might win more. They could win an outright majority, or they might win enough for the more centrist right politicians and party in that state to join together in some sort of coalition. Now, that's been, most parties have said that they will not go together with the AfD in a coalition, but there are signs of cracks happening in that, what they call the cordon sanitaire. So all bets are off, we're not really sure. And then what happens is that that party would then have obviously a great deal of control over the state if they were in a coalition or they had the outright majority. And then the MPs themselves get together and they vote for the prime minister, the equivalent of a state governor in the United States. And if they've got the numbers, it is perfectly possible that Bjorn Hooker could become prime minister of that state. A lot of the power rests with the parliament, but obviously the direction of travel would be determined by that governor, by that prime minister. So it's going to be a very interesting point. And that's only one of three states where they're looking really strong at the moment.
Well, in your documentary, a frontline documentary, Germany's Enemy Within, Evan, you spoke with one of your sources that you spoke to quite a bit, and he was a very compelling individual, Stephen Kramer, and he was with the Defense of Democracy Department, and he was expressing, he's Jewish, and he expressed his, really grave concerns about if that comes to be, he says he will leave the country. And here's how that conversation went on.
We Germans seem to have a cultural problem with reading, understanding, and listening what dictators are saying, writing, and doing. When Hitler wrote Mein Kampf, people said, ah, come on. For God's sake, read, listen, understand. Take it for real, what they say. Because most of the time, they do what they say.
So is Stephen Cramer, is he alone?
He's not alone. There were other people we met, and we've heard of other accounts of people thinking of leaving East Germany if the AfD wins some sort of governmental control. I've been told that people have already started to leave, those who are more on the Democrat liberal side of things. There is, I would say, and this is the second or third time, well, I've been there many, many times now, but the second time that we went back for a second film. And I would say that between 2021 and now, there's a palpable difference in the mood of, let's say, the liberal, pro-multicultural, pro-democratic sort of people. They are genuinely worried. And I would say they're quite depressed and quite afraid. And when I put that to Bjorn Hooker, obviously he said, I said, you know, people are worried you're going to cut off funding for democratic projects and pro-refugee support. And I mean, there's been talk about them potentially cutting funding for public media, which is something they have control over in that state. And he's also said that he would curtail the ability of the domestic intelligence to surveil his own party, which Stefan Cramer says, well, you know, to me, well, that says it all, you know. I mean, so there is concern in the East. And at the same time, I would say there's a rising wave of support for them because of what I said earlier, that people, a broader section of the community, feels that the AfD is speaking for them in quite short times in Europe. But to hear it from Stefan Cramer, this is more or less, I mean, very loosely termed, this is almost the head of the FBI, say, based in a state in the States, saying that he's going to leave because the sovereign citizens have taken power. I mean, that's effectively what is happening. And for him to say that publicly, I think we should listen very seriously.
What would this mean for international cooperation with things like helping Ukraine stave off the invasion by Russia, also for the health of the EU? There's a lot going on.
There certainly is. And this is only one layer. You're absolutely right, David. The far-right parliamentarians in the European Parliament have consistently voted against European support for Ukraine in the war against Russia. And they did it recently, 157 of them. Luckily, I would say for Ukraine, obviously, outvoted very significantly by the other blocs, but still, it's there. And there's this strange pro-Russian, anti-Ukrainian sort of position within the far right in Europe, which is being maintained across countries. And Germany is very much part of that. I mean, in fact, two of their candidates for the EU elections are now under investigation for receiving money from Russia and potentially China to push pro-Russian policies. Russia is very much playing a game of destabilizing and undermining Europe through its support of the far right.
Evan Williams is the director of the New Frontline documentary, Germany's Enemy Within. Evan Williams, thank you so much for your reporting and thanks for talking to us today.
Thanks so much for having me, David. Really good to be here.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.